助けてほしいかナナミ。
心を燃やせ、限界を超えろ。
Hello and welcome to More Than Headlines, your weekly anime news podcast powered by Audio Technica, made by Australians for global citizens. I'm your extremely humble host, Brendan White, aka the Salt and Pepper Senpai, and joining in the studio, my trusted co-host and rival, not to be confused with the Aaron Sink figure by any means. She is the Lily to my Ota, Mrs. Courtney Smith. How the bloody hell are you?
I need help. No, I was so... I'm good. Okay, first of all, I'm good. I'm just really floored because I'm on the Sugo Toys website because we've been talking about 18 plus anime figures this morning. Like, that's the last thing we talked about before we started recording, and I'm really concerned.
Yeah, you're down a rabbit hole that's probably got things going into said rabbit hole. Like, it's dangerous. I'm not going to click through and look because... Yeah, there's some great stuff on that website, but yeah, if you click the wrong area of that page, you're going to be surprised by all kinds of things.
And like, because here's the thing, it's not even the like girl figures, like the figures of women. I'm like, whatever, this is what we're used to. It's the male figures that really get me. I'm like, why? It's so explicit. It's insane.
Yeah, and they are packing stuff that could split a tree in half, like... Yeah, some of the members on these characters, like, power to you. I guess why you got so much daddy aura. Like, I've seen some of these, like, Nanami figs, and you're just like, oh, my goodness. Yeah, that is quite the domain expansion you got going on there, I guess, say. But, yeah, there is some stuff out there that could scare the Grim Reaper because it is big, and power to whoever can handle that behemoth. That's all I got to say.
Yes. Let's plug Sugo Toys here. I mean... We love them. They do anime merch. If you want 18 plus anime merch, you can get it at Sugo Toys. Enjoy responsibly, listeners.
Yeah, I've bought a few figs from Sugo Toys, not the R18 versions, just the standard, more safe for work variety. And yeah, they've got a lot of good content on there. And this is obviously not a sponsored shout out to them. They've got some good stuff. But yeah, if you want the good stuff, it is also there too.
Yes, yep. We love their work. Shout out to Sugo Toys.
Yeah, and shout out to us for running the first ever sort of tandem anime trivia this past week in conjunction with Fortress Sydney and Fortress Melbourne, which I feel was a glowing success all around.
Yeah, it was a great time, and I definitely want to talk about it later on because what I really, really love about doing trivia and doing Sakura Society specifically is a lot of that community stuff. I love talking with the community and working with the community and sharing, I guess, like my love of anime and seeing how much other people enjoy anime and I guess that culture generally, because everyone, you know, we're all here for the same thing. And I really, really love and appreciate that.
Yeah, me too. I also loved some of the reactions of people when I'm trying to give them hentai stickers and pins. Like, you watch a few and they just owned it and they were like sticking it straight on their shirt straight away. And then others like, oh my, but then they'd like put it in their, they didn't say no, they'd put it in their pocket and take it. I'm like, yeah, I see you. But no, the vibes were great on Thursday night. It was really exciting and really enjoyable. And like you said, the sense of community in that room was... Yeah, something that I'll remember for a good long time until we do it again in the near future.
Yes, a really, really good time. But we'll chat about it later. Shall we get into some news?
Yes, we shall. And obviously we're going to be unpacking our three biggest headlines from this past week. Do we feel that you all need to know about, presented by our friends over at Iced Tea Aesthetics. As you can see, for any video viewers, we're both rocking some ITA merchandise right now. We've got some Hell's Paradise on Courtney and I've got some Dundadun on myself. So Iced Tea Aesthetics, where anime meets streetwear. Go cop their new Attack on Titan drop immediately. And while you're there, be sure to use code SakuraSociety5. That is the number 5 at the end there at checkout to save yourself some cash each on your order. Let's jump into this.
You like the news?
Whoa.
Love the news.
I needed that.
Me too. I nearly feel like I'm standing up. Like, I've got a sit-stand desk for the audio listeners. I think this is the first time I've ever recorded a podcast standing up. So it's a whole new vibe. I've got my feet on the carpet. I'm feeling like I'm one with the earth almost. Like, it's not touching grass, but it's close. It's close.
It's So close. Let's get into the Crunchyroll Anime Awards, which happened on May 25. So we're a little bit late, but we wanted to talk about who won and who we thought should win, if we agreed with the winners and the nominees and things like that. So we both have the list up here, and we're going to start off with the best anime ending sequence. Brendan, did you want to let us know who won?
Yeah, so the winner was the song titled Request by Krage, and that's for Solo Leveling. It was fun. It was fine. It was enjoyable. We're not going to sort of rattle off all the nominees for each of these. Otherwise, we could be here for quite some time. But I would have cast my vote on this one for Nobody by One Republic from Kaiju Number 8, because it is just a good bop. It's a good time and a good vibe.
I am with you 100%. I feel like Nobody by One Republic, for me, I guess a runner-up would have been Burning by Hitsuji Bungaku for Oshinoko Season 2. I really, really loved that as well.
Yeah, so we'll shift on to Best Anime Opening Sequence. Courtney, you got this one?
Yes, so the winner for Best Anime Opening Sequence was Otonoke by Creepy Nuts for Season 1 of Dandadan. I 100% agree with this winner. I think my only runner-up would have been Level by Sawano Hiroyuki and Tomorrow Together for Solo Leveling. I really, really enjoyed that opening.
Yeah, I'm with you. The other one that was close would have been another Creepy Nuts with Bling Bang Bang Born from Marshalay Magic and Muscles from Season 2. An absolute toe tapper as well. And I'm assuming probably for next year's Anime Awards, we'll probably see the fantastic Lisa Felix collab for Solo Leveling Season 2. But I don't want to go on too much of a rant about the timelines and these nominees here. But yeah, now well deserved for Otonoke by Creepy Nuts, because it is a toe tapper.
Yes. And Best Anime Score, I'm just going to read the winner for this one. The winner is Solo Leveling again, the score by Hiroyuki Sawano. But what do you think, Brendan?
I think that's justified, because like when I'm watching that, it was a cinematic experience in every sense of the word. Like the use of sound throughout Solo Leveling was one of its sort of stronger parts. Dandadan certainly got a nom and it was up there too. But I feel this was a justified one for Solo Leveling. Maybe Frieren as well, because I've just recently finished a rewatch of Frieren, and just the use of sound, especially in those quieter moments, just really helped elevate the content. And it's just so beautiful. So I would have been happy with any of those three.
I'm with you for obviously Solo Leveling and Dandadan as well. I think the score for Dandadan, the music throughout the series, was really beautifully done. Mm-hmm. So those are my two picks.
Okay, so moving on to Best Anime Song now. So we're sort of decoupling that from the opening and talking just the song. The winner again by Creepy Nuts, Otonoke for Dandadan. Can't fault it. It's a similar listing that we saw in the best opening earlier. So I'm with this 100%.
Yes, I also will point out Fatale by Gem for Oshinoko Season 2, which is the opening for that season. I adored it as well, but I think in terms of openings, it doesn't quite stand up to Otonoke, but in terms of best anime song, I definitely see it being up there.
Sorry, I just wanted to quickly ask, like regarding Oshinoko, do you prefer the Season 2 opening track, or are you like me, just a big Yosobi Idol stan 1,000,000%?
I prefer the Season 2 opening just because I think the darkness of it really suits the tone of the series overall. So that's where I stand. But both songs, fantastic.
Yeah,
you can't fault them. Let's go to our must protect at all costs character, which is, I think, the first time that Crunchyroll have had this category. And the winner they had was Anya Forger from Spy Family. Obviously, yes, must protect at all costs. But I think for me, I really loved Okarun in this category. I think while he can obviously kind of stand up for himself, him when he's just a little nerdy boy, I'm like, he's just so sweet.
He is a little sweetheart. And yeah, in those early scenes and those more vulnerable moments, he certainly needs a little bit of extra protection, a little bit of extra love. So I'm with that. Even Yuki Itose from A Sign of Affection, I love that girl. That story that we experienced last year, was so beautiful and so perfect. So she would probably be my runner up there, because Freerun's awesome, but she don't need her protection. She's badass. She can protect us, right? But yeah, Yuki and Anya, and then an honorable mention to Okarun. I think that's the way to go.
Very much.
Okay, so shifting gears into best supporting character here. And I'm in lockstep with this one. I think this is a valid and justified win here. So we see Fern from Freerun Beyond's Journey's End picking up the win here in best supporting.
I actually disagree with this one here. I would have gone with Senshi from Delicious in Dungeon as best supporting character. I think his mix of comedy but also seriousness and ability to really drive the story home for me really brings him, I think, as the all-round best supporting character from the year.
That's fair. And it's interesting because we've got double noms from both Freerun with Fern and Himmel. And then in Dundanal, we've got Turbo Granny and, Granny Seiko as well as best supporting. So a lot of love for some very beloved IP from last year.
Yes. And then we go into our best main character. The winner, of course, Sung Jinwoo. Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Because solo leveling has really swept up these awards. But honestly, I think my favorite main character, who I think is the best main character, is probably Kafka Hibino from Kaiju Number 8. I think of all of the main characters in anime we've seen over the past few years, I think he is probably the best in terms of relatability, realism. I think he's just really the any man's man.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, he is my Japanese spirit animal. I love me some Kafka Hibino. We relate on many levels. But the only other one that I think could have also had a sniff would be Mau Mau from The Apothecary Diaries. I love her. I love the depth and just the vocal delivery and the street smarts and just the, you know, the sassiness that she carries. Like, she is such a great MC. But yeah, Sung Jinwoo shouldn't even be on this list. Like, yes, he's fine. He's a badass, yada, yada, yada. But he's got about as much depth as a shallow puddle compared to the rest of this nominated list here. So yeah, maybe an unjustified victory here for Sung Jinwoo.
I'm with you.
All right, best slice of life anime. I'm in 1,000,000% lockstep here. The winner, Maka Een, Too Many Losing Heroines. I love, 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 love this anime. Cannot wait for the second season. It was my anime of the... What was the season before winter? What's that season?
Fall.
Yeah,
yes.
Of the fall season. It was my favorite anime of the fall season. One of my favorite animes of 2024. So yeah, like, round of applause, hat tip, double thumbs, all that, because yeah, that's my winner with a bullet here.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one too. The only other one I would shout out is Mr. Villain's Day Off, which I adored. It was so funny. But I think in terms of like the drama that Maka Een brought to the season, beautiful, fantastic, 10 out of 10, no notes.
Yeah, and shout out also to The Dangers in My Heart getting a nomination, because it's one of my favorite little romance stories doing the rounds.
Speaking of drama, we now have the best drama anime, and the winner was Freerun Beyond Journey's End. I have to agree with this 100%. It's in terms of the kind of seriousness and the drama that kind of came with this fantasy world. I 100% agree. I adored it. But I do want to shout out Oshinoko season 2 getting a nomination here, because in terms of real life drama, my God, Oshinoko wins that hands down.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, Freerun again, locked and loaded. We can sort of get nitpicky in the fact that it started in 2023 and rolled into 2024, but no semantics. It is the deserved winner and the only real winner, I feel, from this list. Because it's interesting, they don't have a fantasy category. So they sort of bundle all like a sci-fi category, hence why we're seeing a bit of a blend here with like Pluto in here, Freerun, Dead Demons, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, now to Courtney's probably favorite category of the awards, Best Isekai Anime, and the winner of this one, ReZero, Starting Life in Another World, Season 3, justified. It actually came out in 2024. It was a great watch, but looking at this list, certainly one thing is not like the other here. One thing stands out like a big old set of dog balls, and that is Suicide Squad Isekai. I don't know how you snuck into the nominations here. You do not deserve to be in the same discussion as these other five anime listed.
No, like I will say of all of the anime on this Best Isekai Anime list, the only one I watched was Mushoku Tensei Season 2, Core 2. And I certainly had my issues with it. Overall, it's a fantastic anime. But for this category, I can't really say much, except for Suicide Squad Isekai, which I know is crap and I would never watch. Like, if someone was forcing me to watch an isekai, I'd be like, please, anything but this. I would rather watch Vending Machine again.
Oh, yeah. I probably would too, actually, because I watched Suicide Squad Isekai. It sucked. I haven't watched the third season of Slime. I enjoyed the first two seasons. It was really good. But, like, Konosuba, phenomenal. Mushoku Tensei, phenomenal. ReZero, phenomenal. Shangri-La Frontier, phenomenal. Like, some big heavy hitters there in the isekai world. And then you've got Harley Quinn and co. just, you know, paying their way to sneak in the back door here.
Insane. I need to stop talking about isekai. Let's talk about the best action anime. The winner is Solo Leveling. And while we know Solo Leveling kind of swept up these awards, and some things we agree and some things we don't, I do think that Solo Leveling is probably the best action anime from 2024. I think there were so many fantastic series. I think the nominations are really, really close. I do want to call out Kaiju Number 8 and Dandadan from the nominees list, but I do think Solo Leveling deserved the win.
Yeah, it's justified. Like, Solo Leveling is the ultimate action popcorn anime. So yeah, you can't fault it. Like, yes, the story isn't always super deep and super intricate, but the combat and the action on screen will just knock your damn socks off. So yeah, this is one of the first Solo Leveling wins that I'm like, yeah, I get this. I probably would have awarded it as well. But yeah, also shout out to Kaiju, because some of the action set pieces in that, oh boy. And if the rumors are true that it is ending in two chapters, I don't know how. I read the latest chapter overnight. Like, I know we're out in the weeds here, but I don't know how. I can see where you're going, but it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's, we'll be talking about that in rapid fire, because that's, I have thoughts.
Yeah, me too. All right, so best comedy anime winner, Mashle Magic and Muscles, the Divine Visionary Candidate Exam Arc, so aka Mashle Season 2, won best comedy. I really enjoyed it. I found it really funny. But I don't know if I might pivot on this and maybe go something like a Konosuba or even a My Dear Friend Nokotan, just because of the sheer zaniness. But I think it doesn't outstay its welcome, like talking Mashle, where Nokotan at times, we're just like, all right, this is the same sort of gag over and over. It's sort of running thin, where Mashle is just constantly funny. So maybe Konosuba, because it's just that sort of lowbrow humor that I really vibe with.
This, I'm actually with you on this. This is a really tricky, and while I do love Mashle as a comedy series, I think this specific arc that they're pointing out, the Divine Visionary Candidate Exam arc, I felt the comedy was toned down quite a bit. So I think I will have to go with something like My Dear Friend Nocturne. Now, even Spy Family Season 2, I felt was, in terms of comedy, funnier than this arc of Mashle.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Let's talk about best romance anime though, Brendan, because I know this is a genre that we both adore, we both love. The winner for best romance anime was Blue Box, and I am 100% with it. I loved this series. I'm so glad you introduced me to this world, because it's fantastic. I think the only other anime that I would call out really in this romance specific section would be A Sign of Affection, because even though Makin definitely had romance, Ranma One Half is romance, I just think Sign of Affection really ate there, and Blue Box ate as well.
I'm in complete agreement with you. Love Blue Box. It's one of my favorite anime of the last couple of years. It's one of my favorite manga reads, and it just keeps going from strength to strength. Already talked about A Sign of Affection, gorgeous. Danger in My Heart, stunning. Bit more of a slow burn, awkward high school-y vibe. Ranma One Half has some romance sort of sprinkled in, but the what, like, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off getting on this list. Again, some of these judges were just not paying attention when they were putting their noms in, because seeing this on here, I'm like, there's a million better romance stories you could throw into here. Like, I could even see something like Apothecary Diaries getting it, like, in over that. Like, it doesn't sort of lean into it, but it's always there on the periphery. But Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, I don't know what you're doing here. It feels very much like the Suicide Squad isekai we talked about earlier. You've just snuck in the back door. But yeah, shout out to Blue Box. Well deserved.
Yes, for sure. I think when it comes to these anime, I will say quickly, just to go off topic a little, for things like Suicide Squad Isekai and Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, I think those series are, you know, a lot of money is put into them for those IP. And then when they flop, they're like, oh God, this isn't good. But at the same time, they still need to kind of zhuzh it and be like, oh no, it was like actually good because we spent so much money and it's such a big IP. And it's like, no, we don't have to force the issue.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. It feels like this could have been just like a, you know, a Sony related wink, wink, we'll get you good and prop you up a little bit here. So
yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one, best background art. Can't dispute this at all. Like I said, I finished a rewatch this past week, Frieren Beyond Journey's End. The walking scenes, the traveling scenes, just the moments where we're seeing the legacy sort of, you know, hero party and then Frieren's new sort of hero party 2.0, just traversing these gorgeous landscapes. You know, it is art on the screen.
Yep. I 100% agree with you. Frieren is the winner here. Makes so much sense to me. I do want to call out a few, actually, because background art in anime, I think, is something that you don't really pay attention to very much when you're watching, but it really sets the tone of the whole show. And I've got to say, Pluto, first of all,
yeah,
the background art really kind of inspired the world from the original manga, even. Like, there was so much put into the backgrounds in that anime. And then also, Delicious in Dungeon, because they spend so much time underground, you would think, how are they going to make the background art really beautiful? But they managed to do it, but still keep the whole tone and thematics of the series throughout.
Yeah, like, I think everybody on this list, you could probably talk me into a winner over time, I feel, because yeah, like Dundadun's on here, like you mentioned, Delicious in Dungeon, Demon Slayer, some of the best looking animation around, Frieren, Pluto, and then Apothecary Diaries. They all do things better than so many other anime out there. And like you said, the background is the table setter.
Yeah. Let's go to best director, though. So our winner here is Keiichiro Saito, who directed Frieren. I agree with this 100%. I think Frieren, as anime of the year in my heart for 2024, just gorgeous story. Everything is beautiful. The storytelling beautiful. Directing beautiful, but I do want to call out Megumi Ishitani, who directed the One Piece Fan Letter. While I'm not myself a huge One Piece fan, Fan Letter was really, really beautiful and a beautiful way to thank the fans for their support over the decades of One Piece. And I think in itself was just really lovely to see something like that come from anime.
I've heard a lot of good things about that One Piece Fan Letter. I haven't yet to sort of spend some time to give it a look, but yeah, I can't really dispute that at all. But yeah, Frieren again, completely justified. Like, it is just gorgeous and so well planned from opening frame right through to the end. Like, everything has a purpose. Everything is sort of moving this plot forward, building out the characters. The use of sound, the use of sort of wide shots, tight shots, etc. Like, it is so pretty. And my God, I know I've said it a few times now, but that reviewing I did this past week, it just hit. It's exactly what I needed at the time. And something else that just hit. Best character design winner, Dundadun. I'm with this. I love the characters. I love the yokai, the aliens. I just love that artistic flair. And we've got, again, some heavy hitters on the nominated list. I think I'm in agreement with this entire list here. But yeah, Dundadun would be my victory here for best character design. Where you at?
I actually really struggle with this specific category, because when it comes to anime and manga and the culture in general, I think the people that, you know, design these characters are so, so good at what they do. And I honestly can't pick a winner. Like, does Dundadun deserve to win? Yes, but so does Delicious in Dungeon. So does Demon Slayer. So does Frieren. So does Kaiju No. 8. So does Apothecary Diaries. For me, I think this is the only category where I can't say there is a definitive winner.
That's fair. And I think, like, out of all those noms we mentioned, a lot of them are, you know, panel to pixel, almost a one-to-one. Like Demon Slayer, the art style in the manga is a little bit choppier compared to the gorgeousness in the anime, but everything else, you look at it and you can see straight away that it's almost a one-to-one. So, yeah, I wouldn't be sad if you sort of said, no, Kaiju should have won or Freedom should have won. I'm like, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But Dandadan, I just love those characters. I love the world and it just resonates with me big time.
Definitely. Let's get into best animation though. And this one for me was a bit of a shock. I'm not upset about it and I'm not surprised, but I think I was expecting something else. But the winner for best animation is Demon Slayer, the Hashira training arc. Yes, beautiful animation, but Solo Leveling, I was shocked here a bit that Solo Leveling didn't get best animation or even Dandadan or Kaiju number 8. Like, they all have great animation for sure, but this is the Solo Leveling sweep year. Like, why did they not sweep this?
I think just when I think of Demon Slayer, I just think that, yeah, it is elevated animation, especially when you're seeing like these breathing abilities sort of come to the fore. Like the way they use these elements combined with the sword play and the crazy frenetic combat, like it is in very rarefied air compared to some of them. But like in the quieter moments, definitely any one of these others you just mentioned could be in discussion, and I wouldn't sort of bat an eyelid if you said no, this other one won instead. I'm like, yeah, cool, I get it, because I feel like this is again 6 very deserved winners. And yeah, Solo Leveling does hit hard and it is a gorgeous world and the combat is great, but I think Ufotable just have somehow taken that secret sauce, added a few more little ingredients to it, and have just got their own animation style that is just so unique and distinctive when it comes to combat, especially with movement. And that's where I'd say it probably edges it out ever so slightly.
I see that. All very deserved for sure.
All right, the next one, I do not agree with this winner, minor spoilers. Best original anime winner is Ninja Kamui. It was fine, you know, modern day ninja mixed with sci-fi, mixed with espionage. But like off this list, we've also got stuff like Girls Band Cry, Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night, Train to the End of the World. Those three I would take 10 times out of 10 over Ninja Kamui. I would not put Bushigiri as the number one. It started good, it's got a fun open, but it was so poo, yet it's on this list. And then Metallic Rouge, also very poo. Like, again, 3 anime, or at least 2 of these anime don't deserve to be on this list. But yeah, I would have went with one of the musical noms as the winner here, I think.
I'm 100% with you. For me, it should have been Girls Band Cry. Without a doubt, it should have been Girls Band Cry. Fantastic. Jellyfish, I think, did falter a little at the end there, and Train to the End of the World, same thing. It started really strong the last 3 episodes, kind of dropped it a little. Metallic Rouge, why? Like, no. Butchigiri, no. Ninja Kamui, fine. But Girls Band Cry should have been the winner for best original anime, in my opinion.
I think if Jellyfish had 1 extra episode, it would have hit so much better, because they rushed to that conclusion so fast. But yeah, Girls Band Cry is the winner here for me for best original.
All right, best new anime series. And this one, I kind of do want to discuss the noms as well. So the nominees were Dandadan, Delicious in Dungeon, Frieren, Kaiju number 8, Solo Leveling, and Apothecary Diaries. And the winner was Solo Leveling. And the reason I bring up all of the nominees is because we could have picked anything, you know, like you really could have picked anything, but I just think Dandadan, Kaiju would have sit better in this position for me.
Yeah, Dandadan, Kaiju, or Frieren. I would have put, like, I love Solo Leveling. I gush over this world and the characters frequently, but it would be number 4 on this list for me as far as deserved winners. But yes, we have sort of had a little bit of a shot here at the judges and their decision processes here. Like, obviously, Solo Leveling already in its 2nd season now. Apothecary Diaries already in its 2nd season now. So there is sort of almost that question mark too, where is it still a new season, like a new series now that we've got season 2 on the way? But it is the Crunchyroll and Sony cash cow, so of course they're going to sort of peddle it. I think it had 22 nominations. So
I really... Like, Kaiju, I feel like, is getting no love, these Crunchyroll Anime Awards, and I just want to see it have something to its name.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. It's deserved. Like, it feels like it is the constant bridesmaid in this scenario of these awards. But yeah, Solo Leveling won Best New Anime Series. We don't really agree with that, but if you do out there, power to you. Okay, Best Continuing Anime Series was won by Demon Slayer, related to the Hashira training arc. Obviously, we've mentioned that. Some of the nominations also included Bleach, Thousand Year Blood War, My Hero Academia, One Piece, Oshinoko, and Spy Family.
I think Oshinoko Season 2 should have won Best Continuing Anime Series here. I think the second season of Oshinoko was so much better than Season 1, and Season 1 was already fantastic.
Yeah, I'd go from this list, Oshinoko 1, My Hero Academia 2, Demon Slayer or Spy Family is 3 is a coin toss.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then we're going to go into the anime film of the year for 2025. So I think this kind of spans like 2024, 2025. The winner was Look Back, which I 100% agree with. Look Back definitely deserves to have anime film of the year. I do want to shout out, not necessarily for, you know, its greatness, but just for its world building and it's the fact that it's not even canon. Spy Family Code White was so funny and just such a good time. And even though it's not canon, it's not part of the story, I think it was just hilarious, really well done. Like, if I had kids, I would be taking them to see Spy Family Code White.
Yeah, I've been trying to take Winston and Bentley to the movies a few times now. They're just like, excuse me, sir, what are these dogs? I'm like, they're my support animals. I need them for the
my
movie.
My sons.
Yeah, they're my sons. Don't we look alike? Like, Winston and I, we both have little white mushes these days. But yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, Spy Family Code White, ton of fun. Look Back, completely deserving. Like, Fujimoto absolutely nailed it with this. It was such a gorgeous 60-odd minute journey that is so full of care and heartbreak and just attention to detail. Like, I loved seeing this in the cinema, and it was one that really got me. Yeah. Really moved me.
Yeah, so emotional.
Super emotional. All right, we're moving into the big dog, the Anime of the Year Award now. This is the kingship happening here. And to no one's surprise, you know, we talked about this earlier on episode, I think, 49, when we were sort of seeing these noms start doing the rounds. And yeah, Solo Leveling won Anime of the Year for the 2025 Crunchyroll Anime Awards, beating out Dandadan, Delicious in Dungeon, Frieren, Kaiju No. 8, and The Apothecary Diaries.
I think we can take Frieren off this list because Frieren was...
2023.
Beautiful love doesn't need to be on the 2024 nominee list. That's fine. But for Solo Leveling to take out Anime of the Year, I'm like, Dandadan was right there, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, it was right there. It took the world by storm. And I know Solo Leveling was like kind of the big, like, normie Anime of the Year. I get that. But I think if you ask any really dedicated anime fan who watches seasonally, they would agree with you that it should have been Dandadan. Could have been Apothecary Diaries, could have been Kaiju No. 8, could have been Dungeon Meshi. Any of those is fine, but Solo Leveling was just so pandering to the general audience, which is also why I think it probably won.
Oh, I'm with you 100%. Like, this is the low-hanging fruit. This is the, oh, it's in the headlines everywhere. Oh, it's a media hype. Oh, Daddy Sung Jinwoo. Oh, it's a Crunchyroll exclusive. It breaks Crunchyroll all the time. Yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, it was the winner. My winner, definitely Dandadan. I would have probably put, if we scrap Frieren from this list, Kaiju would have been number 2. And then, depend on the mood, Apothecary and Solo Leveling could maybe be debated. Oh, but then Delicious in Dungeon as well. Like, Dungeon Meshi is so good.
So good.
Either way, Solo Leveling ain't number 1 for me. Like, Dandadan, number 1 with 17 bullets. Kaiju, probably number 2. And then, roll the dice for see what happens with 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, but that was the 2024 Crunchyroll Anime Awards. Whether you agree, whether you disagree, I think it's definitely worth discussing, you know, with your friends, with your community, with your circle, like, what do you think? Because those discussions, I think, help bring us to become better consumers of this medium. I think being more constructive and more really intentional about what we watch and what we think about what we watch. And, you know, as someone that doesn't score my anime that I watch ever, I think this is where that scoring goes. All of that energy that I would spend scoring goes into these kinds of discussions for me. And that's why, you know, even though I don't love award shows, I think discussing things like this is really important.
I think so, especially if there's a capacity to spotlight anime that might have not gotten the coverage or have been forgotten about when it comes to award season, because there's, you know, hundreds of anime coming out every year without fail. And a lot of them are missed and skipped due to what's in the bright, shiny lights, like a Solo Leveling, because the marketing machine behind some of these big exclusives often get all the oxygen sort of swallowed up from themselves wholly and solely. So, yeah, talk about the winners, talk about the losers, talk about the things that you feel should have been in these sort of categories, but also do it in a nice, open, calm, casual, respectful way, because yeah, we all like things different. We like what we like. We don't yuck nobody's yums. Like, if there is someone out there that's like, Solo Leveling should have and could have swept every nomination that it had, like, you do you. I'm not gonna sort of run you into the ground based off this, but yeah, don't always agree, but yeah, just be able to talk from a nice, calm, neutral sort of perspective, I think, right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right, story number two, sticking on that Crunchyroll discussion. Crunchyroll has announced that it will stream the following anime starting from July through October for their upcoming summer lineup. Very exciting times here. In alphabetical order, A Couple of Cuckoo Season 2, Campfire Cooking in Another World with My Absurd Skill Season 2. Would you say Clevertess? Is that how you pronounce
Clevertess.
It? Clevertess. My Dress Up Darling Season 2, Rent a Girlfriend Season 4, Scooped Up by an S-Rank Adventurer, with an exclamation point on the end, Sentenced to be a Hero, Watari-kun's is about to collapse. They are on the list doing the rounds. Obviously, we've got more to build out with their sort of watch list and then the other platforms, but that's the first go-around. How are you feeling about that, Court?
Look, not going to lie, not loving this initial list. I know they're obviously going to bring in more later on. They will have many more announcements at many more anime conventions around the globe. But at the moment, this announcement and this lineup is not tickling my pickle.
That's fair. I think because all the tickling is happening on this guy's pickle, because I will not stand for this slander, Cordy. I will not stand for it, because there is a lot of rom-com fire in this lineup that I am personally very excited for. A Couple of Cuckoos, it was an enjoyable watch that first season, and I'm actually surprised that it's gotten a second season, but I've been reading the manga infrequently because it goes forever. I think it's like nearly 400 chapters. It is a long, long boy, but it is enjoyable. Rent a Girlfriend, you read the name and you go, ooh, like maybe not, but it's actually got a lot of heart and a lot of sort of soul on display there with, you know, Chizuru and co doing their thing. So yeah, the third season had some really heavy emotional moments with a big sort of passing of somebody in that season, which really hit. So I enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to that. My Dress Up Darling, I know you haven't watched any of it, but I'm a big My Dress Up Darling stan, rushed manga ending aside. And then, yeah, obviously we haven't sort of even mentioned, you know, Dandadan Season 2, Kaiju Number 8 Season 2, The New Rascal Does Not. And then the other stuff that's sort of popping up as exclusives on Netflix and High Dive as well. So we've got a good smattering of anime, and I feel like the season of Brendan is looking oh so fine.
Look, the ones you mentioned in the back end of that, Dandadan, Kaiju, Rascal, very, very excited, but with the current lineup that we've been given. But you did mention Netflix, and that is going to lead into our next story, because Netflix showed the world a sneak peek of the second season of the live action One Piece adaptation during Tudum, which was held last week. And in this sneak peek, we also got a reveal of our little guy, Tony Chopper, his live action form.
I want to avoid upsetting the internet here, Courtney, so I'm going to try and pick my words carefully, tread lightly, because we know the internet can be up in arms very quickly for very silly reasons. But I personally thought he looks so goddamn cute. It very much felt very in line with the rest of this live action universe that I've seen so far. I enjoyed the first season. It was fun. I like what they're doing with their sort of reimagining and interpretations of the source material and how the characters look. But I feel that, yeah, our little digital Tony Chopper looks right at home in this universe, and he's voiced by Michaela Hoover, who I thought did an excellent job introducing us to the world's favorite furry doctor. So, yeah, I'm not offended at all. Some of the other people, there was a lot of disappointment where they're like, that's not my Chopper. And I'm like, okay, why not? It's close.
I think he looks fantastic. I think they've done a great job. I'm really excited for the second season. I loved season one of the One Piece live action adaptation. As someone who's only watched really the first 20 to 30 episodes of the anime, I think they did a really, really good job of keeping it very much on track, but also keeping the pacing interesting. And live action Tony Chopper looks amazing. Boku wa Doctor Tony Chopper. Like, what a guy. What a little guy. I, as the expert on little guys, I think he is 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I feel if you're like building a little guy crew, he'd be right there with you. He'd be
100%.
Arm in arm, walking down the street, singing and dancing and creating all kinds of chaos.
Yeah, I think I would be best friends with Chopper. Like, we would be besties. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get into some rapid fire news presented by Otaku Box, the only anime box with scale figures, voting, and ecchi. And when I wrote the first three stories in the script, these two stories were not out yet, but then these two dropped literally yesterday and last night. And I was like, I have to talk about them. So first of all, the Kaiju number 8 manga is ending in 2 chapters. Second of all, we have a trailer for the Gachiyakuta anime and premiere screening dates. And oh my God, it looks insane.
It looks so good. Like, we'll get to the more dire, heartbreaking news in a second. But yeah, Gachiyakuta, oh yeah, it looks like it's going to be a banger. This is also part of the summer release as well. So this is on Crunchy Slate. So another good sort of positive checkbox met there as far as a nice loaded season. Like, it is going to be stacked, Courtney. Like, when we're putting our to watch list together, I'm scared at the human hours we're going to lose because we're going to be watching like 50 anime each or something. It's going to be crazy, but it looks cool. I love the tone. I love the world. I love the art style and the use of color. Like, mwah, 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 mwah. Love that, 100% on board, but I'm not on board. Like, I sort of ruined and sort of buried the lead earlier because I didn't see it in, I didn't read rapid fire news. But yeah, Kaiju number 8 is allegedly ending in 2 chapters. I read the latest chapter overnight and I can already see, like, in my head, I can see, okay, how they're going to try and end this in 2 chapters. But this world feels like it could have gone for another 100, but it's going to end on like 128 chapters. I don't know what Matsumoto here has sort of decided or why they've decided to sort of pull the parachute so early, because it feels like the world's behind Kaiju. We've just seen all these nominations in the awards. There's so much more meat on this bone. But like, on the one hand, I go, okay, I admire that you're not going to drag this out and you're going to end it on your own terms. But also I'm saying your terms don't make sense.
I am shocked. When I saw this news, I was like, wait, what the heck? Because I'm not up to date, but I'm at chapter 114. Like, I could very easily catch up in less than a day, in a few hours even. Mm-hmm. And at the chapter that I'm at, there is no way that this can be wrapped up in an extra 16 chapters, essentially. This is so weird to me. And I'm like, is it because of, you know, the publisher? Is there something going on? Is it the mangaka? Is it, you know, whose side is this coming from? Because like you said, I just don't feel that it can be wrapped up in this little time when it is a monthly release, right? It's a monthly release and we're only getting 20 pages per chapter. What is going on?
I'm hoping these final 2 chapters are like 60 pages or something like that, so we can get some depth and some actual explanation as to what's happening. But this latest chapter, I can foresee where they're going here, and I can see how they're going to try and wrap a bow on this super quick. But when we see stuff like JJK and Chainsaw Man and stuff overstaying their welcome, in my opinion, and yet Kaiju and like My Dress Up Darling getting pushed out the door almost forcibly, like, I don't know what Shonen Jump are up to. I don't know if the mangaka has sort of pissed someone off there and they're like, you know what? We are cutting your funding, son. Like, you got to wrap it up now. It sucks, man, because, yeah, it's such a good story. And knowing we've only got 2 months left of this great world and these great characters, like, it makes me really sad.
I just, like, I love this world so much. Like, I love Kaiju number 8, and I was talking about it before when we were reading the awards. Like, I feel like it doesn't get as much recognition as it deserves. Like, maybe people just don't see what I see in Kaiju number 8, but it's fantastic. Like, I cannot sing its praises enough. And when I heard this news, I saw people were talking about it in the Discord, and I was out last night at the Final Fantasy Magic the Gathering pre-release when I read the news. I was like, I can't address this right now because I'm heartbroken, actually. Like, really
it
hurt.
Sucks. It sucks. Yeah. And like, you know, we did the trivia on Thursday night and we had a Kaiju number 8 related question tied into the ending, you know, Nobody, One Republic, absolute banger. And when I was playing that, like with the question airing, everyone in the room was singing, like everybody knows this world, everyone's having a great time. And yet for some reason or another, yeah, Shonen Jump have decided, or like, you know, I'm, you know, completely hypothesizing here that they're the ones who've sort of turned the screws here. But it just feels so abrupt because there's so much world building still to come and they've given us so many things. And now none of this is going to get addressed or have much depth to it if it's only 2 chapters. So I am distraught, Courtney.
Make at least, like, give me more. I'll get more Gen tattoos. I promise, please. I just love Kaiju number 8.
Yeah, I'll get like a big Kafka Hibino tattoo on my back like Steve-O did of himself with the thumbs up. I'll get a full giant Kafka doing this one.
Please.
Yeah, I will do that. Like, Matsumoto, if you're listening, yeah, reach out. We'll work out a way to try and extend this. My body is yours to do as you please with. We just want more Kaiju.
Please. All right. I need to stop being sad about Kaiju because we need to talk about what we've been watching this week, Brendan. And I have had a super hectic week where the only thing I've really managed to watch and catch up on is Apothecary Diaries, which is fantastic. We're kind of wrapping up that season, which I'm loving. But the other big thing that I watched this week that I was so, so grateful that I got to watch was Dan Da Dan Season 2, Episodes 1, 2, and 3. We were invited by Sugoi Co. to the fan screening, which happened on Monday. So it was like 3 days, 4 days before the first three episodes are in the cinemas now. And oh my God, it was fantastic. So I went to this event after work. Sly, of course, was amazing. Sugoi Co. were amazing. They had the photo wall up with the Dan Da Dan poster. We went in. There was like a little sneak preview of an interview with the two directors from the season. And then it went in with the last episode of season one. So you got to kind of catch up. They did a quick recap of all of season one. Then you watched the last episode of season one. Then it went into season two, episodes 1, 2, and 3. And I'm not going to spoil anything because I want everyone to kind of experience it. But artistically and from a kind of like direction perspective, it was even better than season one. Like watching the way that they used all of these like techniques and the voice acting and the animation and the music and the colors, everything was so good. And I was so happy that I got to see it in the cinema.
I'm so excited and slightly jealous because, yeah, we didn't have a premiere down here in Melbourne for this one. I had full intention of going to watch it last night to be able to sort of talk with you in a shared aspect now, but I'm moving house, I'm tired, I'm old, I needed to rest and eat sweets and tasty treats, so I did that instead. I'm going to go check it out in the cinema tomorrow because, yeah, I've read all the manga, I know where this is going, and seeing what plays out with the evil eye and, you know, a worm. Not going to say anything more about that. Not going to be any more specific. Like, oh boy, it is going to be quite the viewing experience. So seeing all this translate to a big ass giant screen with a bucket of popcorn, I'm going to be living my best life because I love this world. You know, we gush about Dundadun very frequently here on the podcast. Like, it is quickly becoming an all-timer for me. And yeah, from what I've seen in the trailers and just hearing it confirmed from you as well, it feels like that production quality, that budget, that direction, just everything about it has been leveled up. And I can't wait to see it in cinemas tomorrow.
And I highly, highly recommend, if you are seeing it in the cinema, you should also, at the end, I think they should include the interview with the two directors of season two. And please stay for that because it was really, really insightful. I really liked hearing from the two directors because one of them directed last season and the other one, he directed the opening for last season. But then this, for season two, he's co-directing with the main director. And seeing how they work together and how they make the decisions they've made for the series is actually really, really interesting and informative. And I think watching that gave me even more of an appreciation for the series. But I will say I was not expecting some of the twists that we had in this kind of first Evil Eye arc or first part of it. Seeing who was the good guy and the bad guy, and it was very unexpected, especially considering episode 7 of season 1. I was kind of hit in the face a little bit and I was like, oh, okay, it's a bit spicy.
I know what you're talking about, and yeah. I'm just going to sort of nod with acknowledgement, but nothing more, because yeah, I'm so excited. My God, I read the latest chapter of the manga last night, and like, I cannot wait to see some of that translate to screen in a couple of years' time, because holy shit, this story goes some places.
All right. What have you been watching, Brendan?
Okay. I'm just going to sort of cherry pick a couple here because, yeah, I have been watching a little bit, reading a little bit, but also been moving house this week. So I just wanted to sort of grab a few standouts that just sort of, you know, stick out in my brain from things that I've been really vibing with. The drama brewing is all but certain to bubble over in My Bias Gets on the Last Train. It's a manhwa that I sort of referenced a couple of weeks ago. It's so good. The tea is delightful. It is got the right amount of heat, super flavorful. So you see Yao Woon, who's obviously one of our lead MCs, his former friend and former crush, Aryun, actually arrive on the scene now to really sort of stir up a lot of trouble and sort of potentially turn this like thing into a love triangle, perhaps. So she's back. She wants him so bad. And she's just constantly in and around his life at the moment, like rocking up to his work all the time, calling him at like strange hours. Like she is sort of, yeah, tonguing for Yao Woon super bad. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. Another one, I'm fully caught up with Windbreaker. And I've got to say, Tsubaki might be my favorite character of this season or potentially of this year so far. Like, such a beautiful powerhouse of a human being with so much depth and so many layers. Like, the entire Kisei Street arc that we've just sort of been working our way through has been really strong, really phenomenal from start right through to the finish from the latest episode that aired this week. And Tsubaki sort of stands atop of a host of characters that we've been introduced to this season and a host of big moments. Like they stand atop of the mountain, I feel like. Really, really great addition to this world. And I love getting that backstory a couple of episodes ago where we sort of see him start to embrace this sort of inner feminine side and sort of the curiosity and sort of the hobbies that are a little faux pas for, you know, people like Japanese boys, and just see him fully embrace all that and just run with it after sort of meeting that beautiful old couple. Like, it is so good. The fight choreo in these last couple of episodes as well. Holy guacamole. Like, I love watching sort of hand-to-hand combat fight scenes play out, because you can really see when animators are sort of earning their paycheck with that kind of stuff, and seeing what Cloverworks are doing there with some of those fights. Whew. But yeah, shout out to Tsubaki. Wanted to mention that fantastic black/red-haired gorgeous powerhouse of a human being. Are you up to date on Windbreaker?
I'm not up to date, but I think Tsubaki has really, for me, heightened the series or my enjoyment of the series just because it was very kind of like combat heavy, and I'm not a huge fan of non-stop action. Like, I do like to have some slower moments, and Tsubaki has really helped to bring those moments to the series, and I really love that character.
Yeah, so we get introduced to like two more gangs in these latest two episodes, and we see like a big massive fight break out, but the storytelling weaved in and around that, really, really powerful. Another one, I thought it was a welcome change of pace to Be Hero X the last couple of weeks, where we get introduced to the new hero Lucky Cyan, who was the sole survivor of a plane crash, who was then taken in and then somehow got propped up and presented as like the symbol of some religious cult, which is, you know, some social commentary we can unpack another time. I'd say beat for beat, they were probably the like least impactful episodes of the season for me, but because they were a little bit more of a quieter, subdued storytelling that lent more into music as opposed to violence. But I still found myself like rooting for Cyan as she managed to escape that sort of religious cult and then bust her way to stardom. Like, she's a really cute character, really, really big hearted. And, you know, her friends who were, what was he known as? He was almost like the Calamity or something like that.
Yeah. Wait, let me bring it up.
Yeah. But like, I really like their relationship and their friendship that sort of develops in this like religious school where she's sort of attending. But yeah, it's really enjoyable, and I like that it sort of took its foot off the gas a little bit compared to the previous episodes that we've had up to this date. Are you up to date with TBHX?
Not up to date, but I did watch the first, I think it was the first episode of Lucky Cyan, or I've seen like the first half of that episode, and I don't know if this is a strange call out from me, but she really reminds me of Hatsune Miku. Yeah. And that vibe of like, such prominence as like a cultural figure and kind of grouping people together, like bringing people together, but it's not, it seems very like consumery almost is the vibe that I get. So I'm curious to see if that's what Lucky Cyan is a reference to.
I'm not going to confirm nor deny anything you've just said there, but like, I think you made a lot of valid points, and it certainly feels like, yeah, this is China's attempt at trying to make Hatsune Miku. This is their, you know, this is their Vocaloid billion-dollar money maker here. And yeah, she's a sweet character, really grounded, good character development and sort of plot development, where we're just, obviously we're building out this sort of hero roster as we get to the tournament. So I think they've sort of wrapped a bow on her story now. We're going to sort of be presented with a new hero in the next episode, but that's really cool. And the other one I wanted to shout out, I read this a little while ago, but I forgot to mention it. So I thought I'd bring it up because I know we were both sort of pretty excited for this one. But I read both volumes that are currently available for the guy she was interested in wasn't a guy at all, done by Sumiku Arai. Really fun high school romance with that cool gender bend twist, courtesy of high schooler Aya, who falls for Mitsuki, the cool guy in parentheses who works at the local music store, who's just got this swag and aura about themselves. But little does she know, he/she is actually the quiet classmate who sits right beside her. So sort of we're seeing this sort of slight contrast where she'll rush to the music store and see this cool dude that's just, you know, a badass, and she's fawning over him. And then beside, like in class during the day, she's still just like dreaming about him. And little does she know, Mitsuki's sitting right beside her, and she's, you know, out of the cool streetwear vibe, and she's just got her school glasses, her hair down, you know, very plain Jane. She likes to be the background character. So you see the relationship builds not only from the cool music guy side, but also the friendship develop at the school, and then where that sort of comes to a head, and they sort of make that realization, that connection is like, whoa, you're the same person? What? So it's really cool. I love the art. I love the use of color in the manga as well. I feel more like, I know manga is traditionally, you know, just black and white, but I really enjoyed this sort of punk rock vibe where they're throwing in these splatters of green neon throughout the place to just really elevate these panels. Solid character development. Good themes, good tone. Big, big fan, Courtney, sitting in my great tier. I'm now very impatiently waiting for more chapters or another volume because I smashed this out in like a day and I'm like, oh, what now?
I think it's interesting that you point out the use of color because I think it really harkens to the digital age, right? And I know that sounds really like boomery to say, but I think for a really long time, manga was this, you know, it was cheap comics that you read. They were published you know, each week in a magazine, like Shonen Jump magazine with a bunch of other, like every chapter was like, you'd get Naruto and you get Bleach and you get something else and something else. So we've kind of gone from these physical copies to digital art. And the guy she was interested in really shows us that, you know, because traditionally they wouldn't be able to have these uses of color. And then as we see a lot more manga be kind of online only first, rather than being published in a magazine every week, it's interesting to see how we can change, or how mangakas can change the medium to lean into, you know, whether it's digital or physical.
I love everything you just said there, and I completely agree, especially with sort of the rise of manhwa, which is, you know, compared to a manga, like it is night and day as far as just the artistic styling. Like, not gonna, like, no disrespect to manga in any way, shape or form, love the medium, love reading it, there's some beautiful illustrations within, but then you look at manhwa, which is so digitally influenced and it's just popping, like it is at, like it is static anime if you want to look at it like that. So yeah, I feel the guy she was interested in wasn't a guy at all. Like you said, it feels like it's a little bit more new age. Like, yeah, I think that's perfect. Like you described, this is sort of, you know, current gen now, or next gen, if you want to say, because yeah, it really helps sort of set the tone. And because it's such got a such a punk rock grungy vibe, when you see these splatterings of just vibrancy on the panels, it just really elevates the content. So I hope, yeah, we can see more of this, or more use of color in manga moving forward.
Definitely. All right, let's get into some final comments. And I don't know about you, Brendan, but I definitely want to call out the fact that we hosted Anime Trivia at Fortress on the past Thursday night, so two days ago now. It was fantastic. It is the sixth Anime Trivia I've hosted at Fortress, but this was the first one where we kind of went back to the old way of doing it on a Thursday night. You had to pay for a ticket, but I think the fact that people paid for their ticket, they were there on a Thursday, they were very much there for Anime Trivia specifically, rather than just general Fortress Monday night trivia. And they knew what they were getting into. There were so many cosplayers, so many people showed up and just had the time of their lives. Like, I was there at the end afterwards for an extra half hour because people just wanted to talk. And I was like, I just love this community. I love the anime community in Australia. And, you know, for me, Sydney specifically, people are really, really passionate, and talking to everyone and getting to know them is so, so lovely for me.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. This is my first go around, so I, you know, had an idea of what to expect, but then at the same time didn't know what to expect. But yeah, we had like 250 people. We had nearly like 30 teams
for Melbourne.
So like, it was awesome, but it did take me a lot longer to sort of score. And because beforehand I ran around, introduced myself to everybody,
yeah,
gave away stickers, pins, just, you know, shot the shit with everybody just to sort of get that ice broken nice and early. But it was really fun. It was a really chill, cozy vibe, which I really enjoyed. And yeah, like you said, these people paid, and like with money, to come along like for these tickets, because usually, yeah, it is like just a free sort of trivia getting run there. So it was nice to see so many people came there, cared for what was getting presented, had a really good time, interacted with myself, interacted with other teams. It was a good mix of people from all walks of life just coming together to enjoy anime and have a good time. And like you said, like, I didn't get out of there until like just a bit after 10 o'clock. Like, Fortress was sort of saying, mate, you know, we've closed, get the hell out of here, take all these people with you. So it was really sweet to just like, yeah, let the hair down at the end, have a chat about life, have a chat about anime, talk about favorites, you know, make fun of things here and there. And it was just really enjoyable, and I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, it was truly, doing anime trivia at Fortress and being in the community like that just makes my heart so full. And I think for me, there are not many things where I really want to put myself out there because I can be pretty shy. But when I do anime trivia, it just, I feel like it really brings out the best in me. And I really hope that everyone that came along had a good time.
How menacy do you get? Do you get very, very cheeky? Do you get a little wild at times, or do you keep yourself pretty under control?
I do get menacy. For those that don't know, I have a background in teaching. I used to be a Japanese teacher. So doing anime trivia for me is kind of like going back to that where I'm up on stage, I'm kind of controlling a room and the vibe of the room. And for me, that's something I really enjoy doing personally. So it's really nice when I do get to do that. And it's not something I do every day because it is very tiring, but every like 3 months or so when I get to do it for trivia, it kind of heals me a little, I think, inside. And I do get a bit cheeky. I do like to make jokes. I like to dance around, go around, talk to everyone like you, Brendan, at the very beginning before it all starts. I go around, introduce myself to everyone, say hi, try and make them feel comfy. Because, you know, ultimately, while it is the trivia is about the people playing and competing, I'm creating the vibe and the mood of the space. So I really do try my best to kind of make sure everyone in that space is going into it really positively.
And I'm sure they did. And I'm sure they left going, man, she's quite the menace, but she's also got a heart of gold. So yeah, the cool thing, everyone like was coming up at the end saying, so when's the next one? And I'm like, oh, it's in 2 months. Oh, thank God. But can you bring it back next month as well? Like, there's a lot of people just saying, we want more. Like, there was even a couple of groups like, can you guys do this weekly? I'm like, I think I got the bandwidth for weekly, man. But like, maybe like a monthly thing could be potentially doable. But for now, it's every 2 months, sort of the first Thursday of that every second month. But who knows? If the demand's there, let your voices be heard out there, Segway Squad. Hit up Fortunes, be like, yo, we want more anime trivia.
Yes. Make sure as well, when the next announcement comes out, you buy those tickets because it does sell out really, really quickly. And you don't want to miss out. We had a full house in Sydney as well. I don't know how many people. I don't think it was 250. I don't think we can fit that many, but we had full house. It was so good. What a time.
What a time. And yeah, shout out to Courtney Cameron and Alex, my assistants from Fortress on the Night. They really helped keep things rocking and rolling and keep me sane. And, you know, we had some technical issues in the Melbourne Fortress. Their usual audio system blew up that morning. So they had to sort of get some kit that day and set it up and jerry-rig a whole heap of stuff. But it worked well. It was seamless and it went off without a hitch. So looking forward to doing this again, I guess, in like August.
Yeah, my God. How fun. All right.
So fun.
I also need to do a big, big thank you to our producers, Orny, Duffo, and Matthew C. You guys are literally keeping the lights on here at Sakura Society through everything, whether it's our Discord server, the podcast, the Fortress anime trivia, everything that we do is thanks to you guys. So if you do want to support us, you can do so at patreon.com/Sakura Society. We do have free and paid tiers, but you can also join us by jumping in the Discord, saying hi, giving us the reviews and the ratings. We appreciate it. We see you all and we do it for you.
We do indeed. We do indeed. So yeah, as Courtney said, thanks to everybody that supports us in their own unique way, whether it be financially, emotionally, spiritually, or just, you know, socially. It means the world to all of us. But yeah, follow us on them socials. Hit us up at the Sakura SOC as a collective. You can find Courtney and my direct social links in the show notes as well. Whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself and much love to all the gorgeous waifus and husbandos out there. Goodbye.
またね。